just a reminder of two things that I think are important, but that just sort of sit in our environment today. One is a reminder that we gather on Treaty 1 land. And I think that the saying, and I use the word deliberately, that we're all treaty people, might be in danger of becoming trite already early in the conversation. And I hope that in our environment, among other things, the reminder when we gather here to do this, that we gather on land about which agreements were made that have not been honored, is important, because not to foster some sort of vague, useless settler or colonial guilt, although we may have reason collectively for that guilt, but rather to continue to be conscious of how we live. I love that Adrian reminded us last week that the presumption captured by the wampum for the First Nations people that runs in the background of those treaties was that we would be friends. And his question for me about who are my friends that are people of Indigenous heritage is one that has kept burning for me. It's been a long time since I looked around my world and saw there an Indigenous Canadian person whom I would, without deliberating, say, that person is my friend. It's a journey to change those things, right? At least it is in my life. And one of the things that can make it complicated, of course, is that we tend to become friends with those who surround us. And sometimes, if you want to wonder if there's a cultural divide in Canada, and your experience is anything like mine, all you have to do is ask yourself, why aren't there any First Canadians surrounding me? Why am I not in the presence of an entire people group? Like, with such thoroughness and frequency that it's not thin on the ground, it's missing from my life experience. I think that's a fairly compelling thing to think about, and to wonder what action to move in a different direction and that looks like for each of us. It's not what I'm going to talk about this morning. Lisa, can I relay the story you told me about your class just briefly here? So we're set up different this morning. Which is a very deliberate thing. Obviously, the chairs don't just plant themselves somewhere. And Lisa walked in and was just remarking how in a class that she's in right now at the university, mythologies of religion or religious mythologies or something of that nature, they'd been talking... Right, okay. Which they'd been talking about the difference between Greek theaters as they're extant, sort of as ruins, as we know the shape of them, and Roman theaters, and how for the Greeks this value of facing inward toward what they thought of as civilization or culture was exemplified in their architecture. And so this is a Greek theater. Whoever's at the front is deep into it, if you will. They're surrounded by the community. Roman theater was much more proclamational, much more consistent with top-down, kind of an ideology, a broadcast ideology. It's an interesting thing to watch for when you're in sacred spaces as well, because it does reflect something about the way we think about what we're here to do and how we might do that. And I wanted to, our space typically is set up in a way that splits the difference a little bit. That's why that, for anybody who's ever been on setup and had me kind of harping about that gentle circle for those chairs, this is what's running in the background. It matters that we see one another so that we understand what we're trying to make and how that might be made, something that I want us to talk about together this morning a little bit. So I'm going to sort of start this off, and then I want to hear from you, and I'll sort of explain that a little bit as we go. Nothing imposing, but I think that I wish there was a way to sell the AGM to people, not so they would even stay, but so they could be part of this conversation, you know. Anyway, talk about a hard sell. You know, not everybody's intrigued by operations. I can appreciate that. Every once in a while when I'm at a retailer, And of course, retailers like to, you know, have our data. These days, every once in a while when I'm at a retailer and they ask for my email, I give them the one that is my main email, which is tim@thetablewinnipeg.com. That's my home email. That's the one where I spend time. I have others, but that's what I default to. And so that's if they ask and I sort of just spontaneously answer and choose to give them that information, that's usually the one I choose. Which is kind of interesting because it's not unusual for that to open up into a bit of a conversation. The table. Yeah. What is that? Is that like a furniture manufacturer? This is a fairly typical gambit. So, and when that happens, I like to answer the question, having been asked, and explain that no, it's a church. But then, I always have this kind of little internal tension, right? Because I don't want to use that word, and it's not because I don't think there's something good about much of the freight that can be carried by the word church. That if we spend any amount of time with that idea historically, we're going to find out that there's a rich realm of possibility there. I know, though, that for a lot of people, that word does not touch that rich realm of possibility. It represents something else entirely. And for a lot of people, if I mention that it's a... I try to use other phrases. I experiment. These poor people, they have no idea. But I'm sort of, you know... If I talk about a spiritual community, I have a different conversation. If I talk about a faith community, I have a different conversation. If I talk about, I religiously avoid the word religious in these conversations because that's generally just not helpful. Because a lot of folks have experienced church, and I can kind of feel like I can taste this in these conversations sometimes, in a way that there's almost this immediate kind of little thin shadow that comes into the middle of the conversation. And they're being kind, and they asked, and I'm answering, and that's all good, and we're being nice to one another. It's retail, after all. You know, so somebody's watching to see if you're smiling at the customers. So it stays pretty civil, but sometimes you can just sort of feel that shadow come in there. And it's not really the setting to say, where did that come from? you know, like then we're kind of violating the social rules, right, about what this transaction's about. But I know from the thousands of conversations that have been part of my life that the odds are pretty good that the shadow has something to do with hurt. And it might be generic. It might be at a distance. It might be sort of this common, here's how the culture understands these things, and I've heard that as negative, and I can appreciate the negative value behind what I heard. All you have to do is have only heard about religion as the thing that ran in the background of residential schools, and that's enough for the shadow to be there, right? You know, it doesn't take a lot, although that, arguably that's a lot, but that's an instance. There could be many, but I know for lots of people the stories are personal. And they're stories about being required to check their brain at the door. Church is not a place where you think. It's a place where you're told what to think. There's stories about an institution that has told them who they can and cannot love and then dragged God into that. There's stories about, these are all Winnipeg stories, by the way. There's stories about being called at strange hours of the night by an elder to tell you that your theology is wrong and you're on the way to hell. Actual story. Stories about people from the community showing up on your doorstep to do the same thing. I can keep going. I'm not trying to make an exhaustive list. I'm trying to make a representative one. There's just so many things that create the possibility that when you use a word like church, you're using a word that is not redolent with hope or with joy or with love, or with possibility, with good things. Those are interesting conversations to me. They make me feel deeply grateful to be part of a perfect church. Right. When you gather a group of humans, you gather a bunch of potential, don't you? Right? Like potential for good, potential for not good, potential for everything in between. You've heard me say here enough times that that maybe ad nauseum already that the community is what the community makes. I've recently added another sort of pithy aphorism to my little list of things that remind me what I'm on about, what matters. I don't know who it's original to. If you know how I can attribute it in the future, let me know. But the way I heard it was that sometimes you have to help make the thing that you want to be a part of. Our culture, collectively, does not do a good job of fostering that idea. Because people that are willing to make the thing that they want to be a part of are people that are hard to market to. I know I'm shortcutting a lot of complicated things with a sentence like that. This is not an anti-marketing screed. Business matters. However, we are much, much easier to direct if we are passive than if we are active. We are much easier to manipulate if we are disengaged than if we are engaged. And as a result, in a free market, capital-oriented economy, there's a lot of forces in those systems that would like us to not think for ourselves, so that we would be easily directed to consume. I was, I think about these things every week. It's part of what I get to do. And I was at the grocery store the other day, and they had no bananas. Well, in my house, bananas are a food group. Like, we mow through bananas. And I'm thinking, how could a national grocery chain not have bananas? And my brain didn't even think in February. Like, all I was thinking was, I'm going to take my banana business down the street. I was just unhappy because the thing I came there to get that I had been trained to understand would automatically be there for me as a consumer wasn't, and that pissed me off. And then I walked away and went, like, you're an idiot, Tim. Like, just stop and think for a minute about what just happened inside of you there. Yeah, bah, right? Perfectly trained consumer. Oh, man. What is wrong with the place when I go in there for a product that they're supposed to have and make and it's not there for me? I'm walking away. It takes conscious work to not approach the thing we might use the word like church for the same way. Yes, Jeremy. Is this about bananas? That part of me went away just about as fast as I talked about it right now because I had 3/4 of my cart full already. I'm also that kind of consumer. And when I went back the next week, bah, there were bananas. All was well. It's a good question. What does it mean to change the way we behave? And at what point do we do that and why, right? So that was kind of running in the background for me. And then earlier in the week, I had a conversation with somebody that thought the table sounded like an interesting church, and they wanted to come and check it out. And person has a complicated story. We both knew that whatever public space they showed up in would be challenging for them to be in. So I thought, well, I'm gonna give them a bit of a heads up. I'm gonna try to describe the experience that they might encounter here. So I described the environment a little bit and sort of the vibe of the place and the happy chaos of all our little people and some of those things. And they still seemed interested. And they were talking about this morning. And so then I thought I should mention that it was the AGM. It's like, there's a reason I'm not in sales. I thought I should mention it was the AGM, so I mentioned that. They were still interested. And then they asked me about the name. They said, the table. Does that stand for anything in particular? And I sort of stalled for a little moment because I thought, what does that stand for? Why do we name this community the way that we do? And that got me thinking about the metaphor of a table and what kind of a table this place we call the table is, what kind of a place it might be. Part of the answer, I suppose, is on the sign that we walk past on our way in, right? Room to explore what we believe. Part of the kind of table this is the kind of table where the things that are on it include include things that are being explored, not just things that are being affirmed. And that the exploration itself is being affirmed. And so I started to think about ways to imagine a table, an actual table, and the experience of being at it, and how that might reflect what kind of community this table is. Let me give you an example, and then I would be curious to hear from the people that are gathered here this morning some of what your experience of what kind of a table is this table. And those might be positive, negative, anything in between. It may be ever so complex. And if you wish to speak up about any of the things that you dream that this particular table might be, I think this would be a lovely time to do that as well. None of those things will be on the podcast, which I'll sort of wrap up the recording part of that shortly, and just so we have the freedom to speak among ourselves. But let me give you an example. I just started using the phrase good table in my own thinking. What would be a good table to gather at as this thing that we sometimes call church? And the first thing that came to mind for me was that at a good table, no one is there because of an external compulsion. No one is compelled to be there in any negative way. The people at a good table are there because they choose freely to be there. And for me, that means, among other things, that they would also have a real sense of freedom to leave. And I realize that in institutional terms, that could sound like a formula for, you know, demise, for the death of an organization, especially a religious one. Religion has a long, deep history of functionally answering the question, what do we need to do to keep people here? In a myriad of ways, some of which might be delightful, but many of which are visibly manipulative. Freedom to come by choice, freedom to go. It might not be a great strategy, but for me it's not a negotiable. I just think that if I'm going to be part of making the sort of thing to which I would like to belong, one of the things that needs to be woven into the very fabric of such a community is freedom to choose. Freedom to come, freedom to go, freedom to invest, freedom to observe without investing, freedom to dig in, freedom to treat it like Teflon, to bounce off and walk away. Because if I'm going to sit at this table, it's important to me that I choose to do so. I think that is, for me, deeply consistent with what Christendom's sacred text has to say about growing up. Paul, writing to the Corinthians, also a young community that gathered in a way that was unusual for their culture, including their religious culture. When I was a child, I spoke like a child, I thought like a child, I understood like a child. When I grew up, I put aside childish things and like lots of adult ideas. This idea of making a table that people are free to come and go from is a complex idea. Who shows up to make that kind of a table? Because it doesn't just appear. It doesn't just stay present without effort. And one of the reasons I chose the child adult text to illustrate this is because this has been my personal experience as a human with a family. The table that I grew up around, there was some amorphous, hard to define moment where that was no longer my table. Now, the assumption that it would always be there, that kept echoing in me for a long, long time. It's only, I would say, in the last decade or so that I've started to consciously think, that table won't always be there. That table I came from, my family of origin table. Now I'm making one so a bunch of people can have that same experience in my household, in our household. Won't that table always be there? Well, you should think that as a child. When that's assailed, that's trauma. But it's just not true. And when you become an adult, you start to realize that's not true. That table won't always be there. I need to maintain a different table provided for somebody. I need to do the work. I need to make the effort. to provide that. And if I do that well, at some point my children will look around their world and go, oh, you know that table that I thought would always be there? It's not always going to be there. I need to make a table. Right? So this doesn't just happen. And to be able to offer it to other people freely means that somebody, some group of somebodies, needs to think about this table as theirs. Otherwise, it won't be here. Now, that could sound like a passive-aggressive chastisement, especially if you grew up around those kind of sermons, which some of us did. And it's not for me. Mostly for me, it's a reflection of something that I feel deeply grateful to get to participate in together with this community, because it is here. And that doesn't happen automatically, which means that there's a whole bunch of people, a whole community of people for whom providing a table at which people can come and go without feeling like they need to make it be there, like a family table, is important. And so we do that. And of course, we sit at it too, right? It's not just for guests. It's a place where the people who provide for its existence also gather in meaningful ways. Awesome. That's what I mean by complex. It's not like there's an on-off switch for that idea. Point where it just poof, flips over, right? But I think it's an important one. So for me, when I think about what's a good table, that's the first thing I think about. A good table is a place where people are free to come and go, and it is offered as such by people who believe that it is important to make that sort of an offering to the wider world, to make that kind of a community of faith, of spiritual exploration, where that feature is easily experienced. I'm free to be here. I'm free to not be here. It's not a external compulsion. It's not about guilt. It's not about the negative idea of religious habit. It's about freedom. I get to choose. All right. When you think about a good table, what the features of a good table might be, what do you think of? I'm going to go turn the thing off. Okay? You think.